Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The recent shooting deaths of four young men in East St. Louis has put renewed focus on violence among young people in general and in East St. Louis in particular. In response, Mayor Alvin Parks implemented a series of steps aimed at curbing youth violence. They included a strict curfew and several other restrictions, including a ban on young people wearing certain colors. Some called that particular restriction outrageous and even a violation of civil liberties. But Mayor Parks has since backed off that recommendation. The mayor is with us in studio to talk about youth violence in his community and his response to it. Also with us, St. Clair County State's Attorney Brendan Kelly. And Sylvester Lee, who's known in the community as Sunshine, is the male involvement coordinator at the Lessie Bates Davis Neighborhood House in East St. Louis. Also, Beth Huebner, Associate Professor of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. She specializes in youth violence issues and has been working with the FBI on problems over on the east side. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Good morning.
Thank Glad
you.
To be here.
Mayor Parks, let me begin with you. Could you give us kind of a quick background on what it was specifically, that is, that caused you to implement these restrictions?
The violence that has been taking place in the community, especially involving young people being killed, young people doing the killing, young people being victimized, quite frankly, by others who were in their 20s and 30s to go out and exercise hits on other people, young people being victimized to go out and sell drugs in the community. We said, we've got to do something to give them what we owe them, which is the protection to actually have a future. It's our job as the adults in the community to make sure that our young people have a future that can be great. But it starts with first having a future.
Let's talk specifically about the recommendations in your proposal, the five or six of them.
Well, the first piece is to make sure that anybody who's out and about is basically in the hands of a custodian, guardian, parent when you're out and about. Because we understand that right now, it's a very dangerous time in certain parts of East St. Louis for sure. The second aspect of this is to make sure that if it's school hours, you're at school. Third thing is, if you're going to be out and about, the good reasons are clearly to be in school, to be attending an after-school program, to be going to church, or to be going to work. If you don't have one of those four areas to be going, you basically need to be at home, in the backyard, until further notice. If you're going to be out, again, let it be with a parent. The other aspect of this whole concept is making sure that our police department continues to put forward a zero-tolerance kind of methodology with what they do. That is, anything that is moving and moving questionably needs to be checked. If a car is speeding and running through stop signs, it needs to be checked. Pulled over, checked for open alcohol, drugs, guns, and other weapons. If someone is walking and walking with an intent looking like they're up to something, they need to be stopped and they need to be questioned. And I realize that some of those things that we're talking about now border on you're infringing on my personal rights, Mayor, but we've got to do these things in order to upgrade the security of our community. There are people who are walking right now with guns under long white t-shirts, guns inside hoodies, knives inside hoodies. It is a situation that we cannot tolerate even for a minute.
There's a loitering provision as well.
There's a loitering provision, and we're saying if you're loitering, whether it's at 11th and Bond, if it's at 15th and Lynch, if it's at 38th and Waverly, you're going to be arrested. Not just warned, arrested.
And the colors provision is something you've had to back down from. Why?
The colors provision was intended to make sure that we put one major signal out there, and that is if you are affiliated or identifying with a gang or you're perpetuating gang-like activities, you will be arrested and you will be checked and you will be prosecuted, and we'll work with our state's attorney and make sure that everything goes the right way in that direction. We never intended to hurt anyone's civil liberties. But because there's been so much of a concern of, Mayor, you're telling me I can't wear a red Cardinal shirt and the Cardinals are about to go into the playoffs?
We hope.
And, yes. And you're telling us, Mayor, you want us to come out and celebrate Dawn Harper Day and you're asking everyone to wear red, white, and blue? Obviously, we weren't looking to hurt those people who want to abide by the law. The goal was intended to let anyone know, if you're affiliating with a gang, it's not welcome here in East St. Louis.
But it's no longer a part of the deal.
It's no longer a part of the deal. Where would you want to wear? just be within the law.
Brandon Kelly, a lot of people might, listening to this, might be asking the question, whatever happened to probable cause?
Well, I can't speculate on any individual case as it relates to probable cause, but I respect that the mayor is taking some initiative to try to get at at least one of the factors that seems to be somewhat predictable in the violent crime that we have in East St. Louis, being in the wrong place, the wrong time, with the wrong people. And some of the things we worked on this summer that seemed to at least temporarily be bearing some fruit was focusing on the wrong place. We know that there's predictable patterns of crime at some nightclubs, at some liquor stores, vacant lots, vacant housing. Public housing is a place that had a really bad history in East St. Louis. Those were locations that we were focused on. But what Mayor Parks is talking about is getting at the wrong time. If we have people that are under the age of 17 and they're out past curfew, that's a violation of the law. That's not anything new. That's not something that the mayor should take any heat for suddenly enforcing what's been the law for the long time in terms of a curfew. That is the law. And if you have adults that are contributing to that, deliberately taking actions to encourage the people who are underage being out past certain hours that they're not allowed to be, then they have to be held accountable as well. So I think this is not this is nothing groundbreaking in terms of the initiatives that are being done. These are things that have worked other places across the country where violent crime was very entrenched in some communities. And we saw that these strategies in the late 90s and over the past decade have really helped other parts of the country. And we believe that there's no reason those things can't work here. And I think what we saw this summer, as we threw every sling and arrow and launched every torpedo we could, it seemed to have some kind of impact. But obviously, these are multi-generational problems. And the challenges will take a long time for us to address. And I think that over the past week, it's been very sobering to see that, yes, we can make progress, but these things are going to keep recurring if we don't have some long-term thinking.
I think some eyebrows, though, have been raised with regard to stopping cars with little to go on other than the fact that they look suspicious and that there may be a profiling element here. Is that of any concern to you?
Well, again, I can't speculate about individual circumstances as it relates to what an individual traffic stop may be. And we have a good working relationship with the East St. Louis Police Department and those surrounding communities. And certainly it's been ruled on many times by the courts that you can have a someone pulled over for a traffic offense, even though, in fact, you may be looking for something else. That's a common tactic in every police department in the country. So you see somebody run a stop sign, you see somebody cross over the center line, that's a basis to pull them over. So that's perfectly appropriate.
All right. Beth Huben, let me turn to you. Do curfews work?
Curfews can work, but I think what we've been discussing here already is that it has to be part of a larger strategy. Like you said, throwing all the tools we have at the problem. So I think that what the whole community is doing is moving in the right direction. We working with a curfew, working with prosecution, working with the community like Sunshine does. I think all of those need to work together. When you only have one piece and it's only for a short period of time, you know, the effect is going to be pretty small. So I think it needs to be very intense and it needs to be sustained. That's where you're going to see the biggest influence.
Do you have any of the current concerns that I've voiced here that we've been hearing from the public with regard to the potential for, you know, dismissing probable cause, profiling, and that sort of thing?
Well, I think the criminological literature is pretty clear that you need the people in the community to be a partner with the police. This is the only way that we're going to have any long-term change. So I think it really needs to be a balance. What it seems to be what they're doing now is making kind of blanket provisions. So anyone's outside, anyone's doing X, Y, and Z, everybody gets pulled over. So in some ways, I think that's helpful. But I think that there needs to be continued training and work with the police to make sure that when you pull somebody over, that they give them a lot of respect and that everybody understands that this is for the good of the community. And I think coming on a program like this to talk about the magnitude of the program and the problem and, you know, why we need this sort of intervention is really important to get the community behind you.
And to reassure the public that something is being done and what's being done is perfectly legal and justified.
Exactly, because 99% of the people that live in this community are outraged by this crime and want it to go away, but don't have the tools to take care of it. So I think this is really important.
Sunshine Lee, how about you? What do you think of this whole program?
Well, what I think, Don, is I'm coming from the community perspective, if you will. I speak for maybe 160-some men that's a part of the male involvement program and many other families. At the Leslie Bates Center, I was a male involvement coordinator and still is. I was always a community organizer for 12-plus years. And I hear from the community. I hear the heartbeat of the people in the community. I'm so happy that the mayor lifted the ban off of the colors, red and blue, in the city of East St. Louis, because it did cause devastation. And, I mean, I heard it often throughout the community. What can we do? What can we wear, even so? And so I want to speak to that perspective. A lot of the guys right now, those are colors that was in the West Coast, Los Angeles, so to speak, Crips and Blood. They no longer wear those colors no more. You go to the urban communities now, you see white T-shirts. The mayor mentioned that just a minute ago, and I applaud him for that. The curfew, I applaud him for that too as well. When I was coming up as a young boy, when that whistle blew in the neighborhood, we had to be home. And we heard on the TV, do you know where your child is at? Mm-hmm. You know, we have to go back to those things. But it's more than that for me. We have to come up with programs, outlets that our children to go and to be a part of. That's why we're trying to develop centers in the city of East St. Louis, more centers, that they can have some type of outlet to go and vent, to talk, to plan. We don't have that in East St. Louis. So when you talk about lottering, where do they go? Where can they be? Okay? When I was coming up, there was 11 centers in the city of East St. Louis. And I said to the council one year when Mayor Carl Office was there, if you give me 6 centers now in the city of East St. Louis, I'll buy you gentlemen a suit. They could name 6 centers that our children can go to. Now, the Leslie Bates Neighborhood Center, under direction of Bill Creed, has 5 different safe havens that they can go and talk about prevention. Okay? We need more. We need more. Because our children right now, our youth right now, has no place to go. They're standing on the corner asking the mayor, Brandon, me, and everybody else, do you have a job for me?
Well, they better not be standing on the corner anymore from what I can yes. What I can get. I have to take a break now. We'll come back and pick up on the conversation. I have Mayor Alvin Parks with me in studio. He's the mayor of East St. Louis. Brendan Kelly is the St. Clair County State's Attorney. Sylvester Sunshine Lee, from whom you just heard, Male Involvement Coordinator at the Leslie Bates Davis Neighborhood House in East St. Louis. And Beth Huebner, Associate Professor of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. We'll come back and continue our conversation. Ultimately, we want to get you in on it as well. What is the best way to deal with youth violence, do you think? Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We will take a tweet at STL On Air or reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation. The subject today is seeking ways to curb young people's violence in East St. Louis, youth violence in East St. Louis. And, Mayor, I'd like to come back to you as a follow-up to what Sunshine was saying with regard to neighborhood centers. Are there going to be any more neighborhood centers?
The short answer is yes. The question is going to be when and how quickly can we get those up and going, because Sunshine is exactly right. One of the points that we have to do is think about intermediate term and long term. What we've introduced in terms of really enforcing the curfew is a short-term solution that has to have, as Beth was talking earlier, long-lasting, sustainable, intense execution, but it's still a short-term law enforcement perspective. You have to think about the sociological impact of having places that young people can go and burn off some energy. Go shoot some basketball. Go play some volleyball. Go have shuffleboard tournaments, ping pong tournaments, whatever it is that you want to do recreationally, educationally, and culturally. I think that we need to have young people creating plays. Who knows? We might find the next Tyler Perry if you allow them to really engage that creativity and show how well they can write and create. We need to do that.
Another issue that has arisen as people looked at your proposals is this going to put too much of a burden on the police department? Are they going to be spending so much time looking for young people loitering out without a parent, what have you, that they're going to be missing opportunities to do other perhaps significant police work?
It definitely puts a major thrust on our police department. But for the right here, right now, there's such a victimization is what I'll go back to of what other people are executing against our young people. When you can go and get a 13-year-old boy to put a gun in his hand and go shoot somebody, let me show you this picture on my cell phone and tell you this is what I want you to do to him. The young man who's executing that vendetta has no idea what that B for Vendetta happens to be. He just knows that $100 looks real good or $500 looks real good. And that is what we're talking about has to be. We've got to pull people away from that. The other aspect of this is when you pull as many young people out of the environment, quite frankly, we're going to put a lot more magnetized approach on the individuals who are really behind the violence. And again, that's some of the people, 25, 30, 40 years old, who are hiring young people to do the violence, to do their dirt.
Brendan Kelly, the cutoff for this is 18 years. 18 and younger are the people who would be subjected to these programs.
I think it might be 17, but
why that cutoff? I mean, certainly between 17 and 25, there are probably a group out there that get in a lot of trouble.
Well, at least as far as curfew goes, that's what the courts have consistently ruled is a valid statute in terms of enforcing a curfew. If you can vote, if you can be drafted, then we can't put a curfew on you. That's basically the logic of the courts in terms of implementing curfews, and that's been in place for a long, long time. So that's also based on Illinois law, that age in terms of the cutoff. But certainly kids that are on the cusp of that and they're going above that, that's definitely going to be a problem. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to address the people that are underage and do what we can to try to eat this elephant one bite at a time. This is a huge, huge problem we're talking about. This is an epidemic of violence which has been in place for a long, long time. It's cultural. It's systemic. And so we just have to take one bite at a time, and certainly a curfew can be one way to help that.
What can your office do specifically to get at this problem?
In terms of juvenile crime, there's a lot of tools that we have. In terms of how we actually implement this curfew, it's a local ordinance which they're talking about. So the local city attorneys, they will prosecute those individual cases. What we're going to work with the city on is those situations where it seems to be repeated, and we have parents that are culpable in that sense, that they are the ones that are allowing these kids or even telling these kids to be out at a certain amount of time, or people that are businesses that say, hey, it's going to be anybody from this age on up can come to our establishment. Well, you can't have kids out at that time who are coming to that establishment at hours that are after the curfew. So there are people who are adults, like what the mayor is talking about, that are culpable in this situation. And that's who we're going to be focusing on primarily and working with the city.
And Beth, you're working with the FBI on this problem mm-hmm. as well. What sort of weapons do the feds have in this instance?
Well, I'd like to talk about what the mayor said as well, that
sure.
Having police on the street all the time and talking to juveniles, that is real police work, and that's very important. And so I think what the FBI are doing with the police department is being present. And so oftentimes we think of police work as just arresting, and that's very important. We really want to get the high-level, involved, very violent individuals off the street. That's key. But when you're talking about a 12 or 13-year-old who's really developmentally quite young and doesn't really understand this, seeing a police officer, having that person around, seeing the FBI is a deterrent. And so that's really what the FBI and the police are working together is being available, being around. So there's, if I have a gun in my hoodie, I just saw a police officer, that's going to change my behavior. I'm going to probably go back home or think twice about what I was planning on doing. So I think, as many people as we can get on the street is better at this really critical time. And I know the police department doesn't have a ton of funding, so bringing in resources from the feds can help kind of fill some of those holes.
And that's something, Dawn, that they did this summer with their Save Our Streets initiative. Mm-hmm. That's something that the Illinois State Police have done with the WAVE detail. But the bad news on that front is both of those programs are dwindling. The mm-hmm. SOS initiative has expired. So there's some real concern among law enforcement as well as the citizens that those initiatives, which had given the city some room to breathe, seem to be receding. And so that's why it's real important in this type of setting where we can speak to the public and we can speak to those who will listen, that we put the pressure on them to remain engaged. Mm-hmm. This idea that these problems, you cannot overcome them, that's just not true. We can do something about them, but it requires federal involvement, it requires state involvement, it requires local law enforcement, it requires citizens to be engaged, it requires ministers and activists like Brother Sunshine to be engaged. But just because it requires everybody doesn't mean we shouldn't do something about it. But I'm very concerned that those things are gradually receding at a time when we seem to be making some progress.
Money is the problem on both ends of the equation. There's too little of it for government and not enough of it for these kids, poverty being, mm-hmm. and I'll put that to you, Beth, poverty being a big root cause for this.
I think poverty is a huge issue in East St. Louis. There's not a lot of opportunities for kids, but there's also not a lot of opportunities for parents. So we see that things like quality childcare, you know, if both parents are employed and in good, you know, workplaces, that really trickles down to the kids. So when there's not a lot of opportunity in East St. Louis, you know, we see a lot of idle time, and that's never productive for anyone.
Idle hands, the devil's mm-hmm. playground, as they say.
Exactly.
Sunshine, you're the guy with the boots on the ground over there. You're working in the community. What causes these kids to be as violent as they have been?
Well, I wish I had my hand on it. What causes it? You know, I seen something recently, and I just want to speak on it very briefly. In Pierre Igo, they had a chemical something that they brought, and the government, if you will, and they put it in the Pierre Igo. Did you get a chance to see that document?
Mm-hmm.
And it caused them to act differently in the community. Now, I don't know, in East St. Louis right now, I would say we don't have enough programs that would cater to our young people and get them off the street at an early age. Don, if you will, let me just share something with you. In the early 1950s, they did a feasibility study in the city of East St. Louis, and they talked about what comes first, second, third, fourth. They said home and family come first. Church comes second. Third, they said school and education.
These are residents saying this, the most important things to them? Okay, go ahead.
That's right. And then they said television and jail was so far down, it was unbelievable. Now, 30 years later, jail from in East St. Louis is number one, okay? Number two is school. Number three is television, church, and then home and family. They do not honor family and home no more. They don't sit around a table and talk about all of these problems that stems in the black community.
When you say jail is one, I'm not sure I understand. Jail is what, the most logical place where they're going to wind up, or what?
They're going to wind up in jail.
That's what this criminal element is telling us.
In the criminal element. And so there's a lot of talk, and as when I sit in different meetings in different settings, of how we need to build the law enforcement, if you will, to bring more people in here to help. But that ain't the solution to me. We need more social programs, things that we can really galvanize our children, engage our children into, that will stop them going in that direction. And so right now, this day, I'm trying to put together a cultural arts center. Now, that ain't to say that this would be the model that we should take a look at. But coming up under Catherine Dunham and others that was before me, that guided, led me to the other things that I was doing, it helped me a great deal, and I'm sure it helped others as well.
Let's take a call. I think someone wants to relate to something that you have said, Sunshine. This is Charles calling from St. Louis. Charles, thanks for waiting. Come on in.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Charles. I don't have a solution for it. I live in the city. I moved here from Manhattan about 10 years ago. And what I have suggestion is when New York City was one of the worst cities to live in, and the crime was about 10, 20 years ago before Mayor Giuliani took over, and you know, he had cleaned up the place. I mean, he had helped clean up the city, and it became one of the best city to live in the nation. And, you know, like I was saying, I don't have a solution for it, but we can learn from situations like this, you know, learn from other cities, what worked for them, like New York City, L.A., whatever, and then perhaps we can make a change from that. I mean, sort of trying to find out what is a new solution for it, see, just call up, or, you know, you can do some research and find out what other city worked, and then we can, get, you know, cut down the crime here as well. I mean, it was one of the worst cities. Even the daylight, I remember going to college there, and the daylight, there was, like, prostitution, drugs in Times Square. We couldn't even walk down there, bright daylight. And, you know, right now, you can go there midnight. It is a perfect place to be. It's, you know, it's no problem.
All right, Charles, thanks very much for the call. Anyone want to respond to that? There are a couple of things going on in New York, as I recall. One was the broken window theory,
sure,
and that neighborhood theory. Brandon, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's something that has proven to be effective, but it wasn't just by itself that they did a broken windows theory. You do have to do those things like code enforcement. You do need to clean up vacant lots. You do need to clean up derelict houses. You do need to go after those magnets of crime, those locations that create an environment of lawlessness. That's part of it. But another thing that that New York City did that often is kind of overlooked is that they hired an additional 50,000 police officers, and they trained them. They trained them very, very well. And the quality of the police officer that you had in New York City during the 90s, during that surge of additional law enforcement, that really made an impact too. They were smarter. They were more flexible. They were more goal-oriented and outcome-oriented. And that continues to be part of the challenge. You know, Brother Sunshine is absolutely right that you need something for these kids to do. You need to attack the problems of poverty. You cannot have social justice without criminal justice, and you can't have criminal justice without social justice.
Yes.
The two are combined. You can't have a community where businesses are going to prosper, where schools are going to be strong, where there are community centers, people are willing to build those type of things, if there's no safety. So it's a bit of a chicken and the egg thing, but you do have to do both. And the most important thing that has to be done, I think, for that area, for the region around it, is to overcome this huge psychological barrier that East St. Louis is perpetually unsafe. And it doesn't have to be perpetually unsafe. And using those kind of techniques that you see that were implemented in New York City, other places across the country, they can have an effect. So the caller is absolutely right. That's the kind of strategy. It's worked elsewhere. There's no reason it can't work here.
Mayor, the thing that I've noted for many years is there are so many good people in East St. Louis who suffer under the stigma of a relative few who cause recommendations such as those that you impose. There are so many victims over there, people who try to work every day or look for work every day, whatever, that live their lives in the proper way, and yet they're victimized as well.
One of the things that we always have to understand, Don, is that East St. Louis has had an image of toughness and corruption for longer than anyone in this room has been alive. It goes back prior to the 1917 race riots.
Right.
So the going through the rebuilding of an image is a multifaceted process. Brendan just hit a very key point, and that is you've got to make sure that people have it in their heads. This city is safe for residential. It is safe for businesses, our visitors, the public entities. It is safe. And when you get that in people's minds, growth and prosperity come right along with it. But at the same time, we don't have the luxury of only working on safeness. We've got to work on positive economic development, bringing jobs. Because let's go to one other key point. We talked about the violence with the three young men who were shot outside the nightclub and another young man who was shot cutting grass. But there were also two people stabbed to death in the last week. Those situations, one of them being Saturday afternoon, those situations bring about a situation in your mind that says somebody has so much strife, so much anger, so much stress inside a household that I'm angry enough to stab you to death. That, in many cases, is driven by the one word that Beth was talking about earlier, poverty. Mm-hmm. Poverty that is intense, it is deep, and it is wide. And we've got to address that issue in addition to the criminal justice aspects of the situation.
We did a program here last week, and stress being a report at Washington University pointing out that stress is probably the biggest contributor to youth violence that is out there. I know you have to go, but I have a couple of calls I'd like to get in before you do so. Let's bring in Darian, who's calling from East St. Louis. Darian, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm calling. I think that part of the problem, it seems to me, is that you have some elected officials there who are talking, and they set the very poor example as far as the kind of leadership that they present. It also spills over to your law enforcement, and I mean bad leadership from school boards to city hall, policemen who are not respected because they're supposed to uphold the law, and many times they're very suspect as to how they perform their duties. And then you have a bunch of people at City Hall who consistently make bad decisions, and the first thing they want to do is take the shortcut, but they're not setting the very best example themselves. The chronic problem can start with leadership acting the part and doing the things that good leaders do, and that hasn't been done for a number of years.
Darian, thanks for the call. I think we have to have Mayor Parks respond to that.
Sure. Well, without a specific example, it's tough to know what he's speaking of. We work hard. We try to work smart. We do everything we can to bring about honest, good government in the city of East St. Louis. Can't speak to all the other entities in East St. Louis, but you do have three other taxable bodies, one being School District 189, the other one being the Park District, the other being the East St. Louis Township. We look at each other, we check each other, and try to do everything we can to make sure that we're providing honest, good government. There are a lot of things that we have to do in city government. One of the things that I believe in is leadership by example. Where I fall short, I ask citizens to tell me specifically what I can help you with. What can I do better? And not just me, but the entire city council, our clerk, our treasurer, and we'll do everything we can to give you honest, good government.
Well, there are some other people over there who feel that something is lacking. I have a Facebook comment here. Does anyone else remember years back when East St. Louis tried something very similar to this and failed to curb gang violence? But it goes on. If the mayor or anyone is interested in truly dealing with the root causes of gang violence, he'll rein in the most dangerous gang in town, the East St. Louis Police Department, and instead address the real cause, poverty, which we've already discussed.
Well, let's go
directly.
The police
have some critics.
Sure, and let's go directly into that. One of the things, as led by our state's attorney, Brendan Kelly, along with others, we're forming now a Metro East Police Collaborative. Mm-hmm. This Metro East Police Collaborative is comprised of not only East St. Louis, but Washington Park, Brooklyn, and Allerton. One of the key objectives is to upgrade the integrity of all of those departments and those departments collectively. Another aspect is to make sure that they have the right training, because Brendan was right. Mm-hmm. One of the real keys to the turning around of New York City is that those officers were trained and trained and trained and trained to death to make sure that they knew what they were supposed to be doing, how they were supposed to be doing it. So integrity, training, in addition, providing additional resources. We understand that a part of that image issue for East St. Louis that has existed for a long time goes back for generations. And there is a stigma that is in some people's minds that the East St. Louis Police Department is not a department of integrity. We're working very hard to erase that kind of an image. Sure, have there been some setbacks? Had to fire two officers over the summer. One officer was recently brought up on charges that he himself had stolen something as an East St. Louis police officer. Those are the things that are setbacks. And you just try to reduce or eliminate the setbacks and understand that you put forth the good things. You do the good deeds and you tell the story.
Right. I have to take another break. Do you still have to go?
I'm going to stay.
I'm glad to hear
I'm going to stay.
I'm glad to hear that. Let's take that break. That's Mayor Alvin Parks of East St. Louis. Brendan Kelly also with us, St. Clair County State's Attorney. Sunshine Lee, Male Involvement Coordinator at the Leslie Bates Davis Neighborhood House in East St. Louis. And Beth Huebner also with us, Associate Professor of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of Missouri, St. Louis. Back to take more of your calls and more questions in just a moment. 382-8255 is the number. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7. KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the subject of youth violence in East St. Louis. Let's go right to the phones. We have a number of callers, and Tom and Afton, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say I applaud the mayor and the city government, but I just wanted to reiterate and ask if there's any expanding on it, but you've exposed it pretty well. But the idea that I really think that these things are beyond the scope of local government to handle, because the problems really deal with if someone is hungry and they don't have enough to eat, you're not going to make progress in educating them about a safe community or anything. They're not cognitively capable of processing information and learning, even if they're hungry all the time in an effective manner. I just think that this is so much far beyond the local government problem, and it's more of a, not even a state, but probably a federal problem that we have going on. And I just wanted to say thanks for trying. I'll take my comments off the air.
Tom, thank you so much. I think we got the wrong Tom there. We were expecting Tom in Afton. We'll take him in a moment. Anyone care to comment on what Tom and Jennings just had to say?
Sure. Well, I'll make mine brief, and both Brett and Brendan have spoken to it earlier.
Yep.
I'm going to say it a different way. We have had tremendous support from our federal government, our state government, and at times our county government with helping with law enforcement efforts. The work of the WAVE team has been tremendous in terms of getting guns and drugs off the street and working those street corners, but it's going to take continuous and intense long-term sustainable support to really bring about the change that we want in East St. Louis.
Brendan, we've used the acronym WAVE a couple of times. I'm not sure everybody knows exactly what
it means. Sure, that's the Working Against Violent Elements. It's a special detail that the Illinois State Police and for some time the FBI had been involved in, as well as other local departments, that was focusing on those type of factors that the mayor was talking about, the guns, the drugs, but also looking at specific locations. That's something that we worked very closely with them over the summer, going after certain locations as it was linked to crime. And they've been an effective tool. But the caller is correct. This isn't a local government problem alone. It's not just a state problem. It's not just a federal problem. It's something that we all have to be engaged in, and it's going to require, to make a difference, it's going to require all those different agencies as well as people within the community to do some very, very difficult things, but things that can be done. And again, they've been done elsewhere to some effect.
Yeah. Sunshine, I just want to come back to you on a previous point that I meant to ask you earlier. As the guy who's on the street and in the neighborhood and the community, do you and the people that you work with have confidence in the city police department? We talked a moment ago about some people don't.
Yes, I do. You know, I work very close with Attorney Brendan Kelly, Police Chief Michael Flory, and all the other officers. Some of these officers I play baseball with and basketball, so on a regular basis I can just go into their doors and say, man, I have a problem. Can you help me with this, thus, and so? Like the caller that called just a minute ago, when they're hungry and need of some food or wanting something in the community and can't get it right away, we have to address those needs. The church has to come out. The community has to come out and talk about that. Our children are angry. Some of them are just born mad for a lack of reasons, a lot of reasons, okay? Family mad because there's no money in the household. The mothers and fathers are struggling. The kids are upset. How can they go to school with nothing to wear when there's a dress code even at the school? And you can't study when you're hungry. And so I'm like that caller you just called just then. We have a lot of problems that need to be addressed. And that's what we're talking about.
Beth, do you have any perspective on that that you'd like to add?
Well, I definitely think that everyone is correct. One thing that we see is that the federal government has less money to support some of these programs. I mean, so this is not just East St. Louis. This is lots of other communities we see in this economic decline, a lot of communities that are challenged. But as far as, poverty and needs, stress is a key element here. And so is fear. And so when we talk to young gang members, 12 and 13, who have guns, they're very afraid of other people in the community who have guns. They're very afraid to go to school. And it's really hard to comprehend that much fear and how that can change your behavior. So that's why it needs to be a multifaceted attack. We need to make sure kids are less fearful and make sure that they have the resources at home. But again, that's going to make a call to the community to help out as well, because we've called to the, many different places for resources, but there's just not as much available right now.
We have an email here from Sheila who addresses this point. She says, I've heard interviews with former gang members who say they joined a gang because they felt a lack of family involvement and acceptance. Is there any effort to address gang problems by confronting issues like parental alcohol and drug abuse, single-parent families, etc.? What about programs like Big Brother, Big Sister, and so on? Thoughts?
I'll jump in on this because we can't leave this other very big sociological factor. It has been stated in 2012 that 72.5% of all babies born to black families are born where there's no father anywhere in existence. The person is just totally non-existent. That's not just not married. Mm-hmm. That's nowhere in the scene. Mm-hmm. So automatically, what's happening is you're subjecting a life to a potential life of poverty, stress, and you have people who are angry. I heard Sunshine mention the point of kids being born angry. Part of that goes to the whole thing of prenatally, what's going on with a child. If the mom is always angry and fussing and bitter and complaining about something, and once the child is born, that child is emulating what that facial expression happens to be, what the body language happens to be.
That's right.
So it starts prenatally, and we as a black community, and I say that as a black community because I happen to be mayor of the blackest city in the country, we have to take some responsibility for putting our families back together because that's a big part of where it begins also. The other aspect of this whole situation, I want to go back to something that Beth just mentioned concerning a number of people needing to be involved on this approach. Somebody has to look up the ladder and ask, how are the guns and how are the drugs getting even into these communities? Who's allowing the guns to come across the border? Who's allowing the drugs to come across the border? It's a real deep issue. So one of the reasons that we feel not just obligated, but really feel as if it's the right thing to do to continue to have our federal government involved is that the federal government is the entity that works most closely with the borders. The federal government is the entity that works most closely with the housing authority. How about a housing authority agreement between the housing authority and the City of East St. Louis Police Department? Right now, we're collecting zero in payment of lieu of taxes for the East St. Louis Police Department or anything else that the city government provides. Federal sources, we provide services to the housing authority properties. One of the things that we need is some kind of compensation. Quite frankly, we need for the housing authority to pay for 12 to 15 police officers. That's an agreement that needs to be out there.
Well, how much conversation have you heard on the national level from politicians running for the highest office in the land about poverty and the problems of poverty in this
country? Well, crime has even dropped off the map.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Those two issues, poverty and crime, mm-hmm. they're ignoring both.
We have an email from Elizabeth here. She says this conversation is incomplete because we don't have young people involved. And she's probably right.
That's
however,
right.
The question then comes, how much conversation, Sunshine, you're in one category, the mayor, you're in another, and Brendan, you in another, how much conversation do you actually have with young people, kids who are on the streets, and talk to them directly about the problems they face? I'll start with you, Brendan.
We actually have quite a bit in terms of the kids that we're interacting with in the juvenile system. But again, as far as East St. Louis is concerned, it goes back to resources. Do they have enough resources for juvenile officers compared to the number of cases that really should be coming to us? Probably not. So that's where they need more additional help. But we do have a lot of kids that are coming into the juvenile system. We have a lot of kids that are in abuse or neglect situations that we're dealing with. We have kids that are victims of crime. We have kids that are on this felony factory line that they're born into difficult circumstances, but they're not born with a gun in their hand. They're not born with drugs in their hand. So something happens along the way. And in many times, those cases are things that we're interacting with in the criminal justice system. Kids that are where we're trying to enforce the child support payments. We're dealing with the parents that are involved with those kids. So one of the things that we've recently done is try to combine all those things into one unit within our office because those areas involving children, they tend to overlap, but the information gets rather siloed when it comes to children within the municipal government, within police departments, within social services, within the criminal justice system. They're not always talking to each other, and that's something we definitely need to do better in St. Clair County, and that's something we're working on doing. So we do hear from these kids. We know what these kids are going through, and it's not easy.
Sunshine, aside from the fact that they want and need more programs, what do the kids tell you?
Well, right now in the city of East St. Louis, we don't have movie theaters in the city of East St. Louis. We don't have places like the YMCA that they can go to and have some activities that they can burn off. But to go back to your question, Don, how much time being really spent with the youth, I have a culture component. It's called the East St. Louis Community Performers Ensemble. This is a group that has been together for 33 years. We travel all over the world doing African culture arts. We have taught three generations, so there's not a center in East St. Louis that I have not been in the colleges, in the civic institution, to address the needs, the problems of the hurt of the children in the community. That's what I do. I like to hear from them so I can be able to address it to the leaders in the community, the state's attorney, and others, so they can hear a voice that will speak for them that they cannot speak for themselves. And right now, the children is hurting, and they need help. Okay? And so the male involvement program, we went to Eastside School, and I think these gentlemen went with me. Okay? And we addressed well over about 400 young men at that time. The question was asked, how many of you guys, by way of hand, showing of hands, how many fathers that grew up in the household? Very few hands went up.
Well, that relates back to what the mayor said a few moments ago, what we've all been saying about the absentee parents. Let's take another call. This time it is Tom in Afton. I tried to get to Tom earlier, but we missed connections. Tom, you still with us?
Yes, thank you.
Go ahead. We're running short of time, though.
Well, as we've heard, these problems, violence and poverty, are multi-generational, and the effective interventions have to come early. And in the national media, we hear a lot about the Harlem Children's Zone and Jeffrey Canada being very effective on these issues. And I wonder if there's a similar project going on in East St. Louis. If there's not, I think that's a good thing to emulate, because the philanthropic folks like success. And if you say we're following a successful model elsewhere, I think money comes after that. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Well, that certainly is a successful model in Harlem. Yeah. Any thoughts?
And I would simply agree with him wholeheartedly. I think that when you see a winner or you see something that appears to be working, you want to contribute to it. Mm-hmm. And it all comes back to money.
We have 2 minutes left, and there's a question here specifically for you, Mayor, from Irvin in St. Louis. Irvin, give the question quickly, please. Time's getting away.
Oh, yes, thank you. I wanted to know about low-income housing, and it just don't seem to work to put that many people together when they are low-income. And is it possible to come up with a rule that if the police get constantly called to a person that's low income, that they will actually lose their help? Thank you.
One of the things that we've done is go with a concept that really was introduced in, I guess, the early 90s, and that is mixed income housing. Most of our housing developments that are new housing developments at this point are developments where you see mixed income situations. The greatest success story that we have in East St. Louis with that is Parsons Place, where there are now about 260 units with individuals ranging from as maybe as little as $20,000 per year to those who may be making up to $80,000 per year. Some teachers, nurses, firefighters, police officers live in that housing development, along with those who are still coming out from under poverty. But he's absolutely right. When it comes to not putting everybody of the same socioeconomic income in the same place.
Well, a lot more $80,000 a year annual incomes in East St. Louis would go a long way toward helping alleviate this problem, wouldn't it?
It certainly would. Right now, we're at about the average household income in East St. Louis is at about $21,000 total household income. That's something that we're definitely working to upgrade.
We're going to have to leave it there. Mayor Alvin Parks, thanks so much for being with us and spending this additional time with us today. We appreciate it. Sunshine Lee, thank you for being with us.
Thank
Keep
you,
up
Don.
The good work, and good luck with you in that. Brendan Kelly, thank you so much for being with us. You too. And Beth Huebner, so good to see you again. Thanks very much for
thank
being
you.
With us. That's it for today. But tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the intersection of religion and politics. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at sdlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.